Take your Bibles and let's turn to Proverbs chapter 6. We're going to start at verse 1 here tonight. Proverbs chapter 6. And of course, we're still in the section that goes through the middle of chapter 9, where a father is giving instructions to a son. And of course, we're not sure whether that's a specific father with a specific son, or whether it has to do more with just a general statement. But the idea is that whatever is said in here is good for all of us. Now, as you look at verses 1 through 11, we see some of the values that wisdom will offer for us. And he says here, starting out in verse 1, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger." Now, the idea of being surety is to be a guarantor or a co-signer, meaning that you have made yourself liable for somebody else's financial obligations. If you're in that situation for a friend. And then he says, if you have stricken thy hand, in other words, you have struck your hand, you've shaken hands on this, with a stranger, you've pledged yourself with a stranger. Now, he's changed from friend to stranger. And here it's referring, of course, to the borrower. He is somebody, by use of this word stranger, that you would assume is not among the normal associates of this individual, and he's not a close associate. It's not a wise thing to do, okay? Why should you put your possessions at risk for somebody who may not pay what he owes? Because if he doesn't, you're liable. Then he says in verse number 2, "Thou art snared," you're ensnared or trapped, as if trapped with bait. "You're trapped with the words of thy mouth." Kind of like drawing red lines that you don't want to enforce, do you suppose? You open your mouth and you let something out, and then before you can take it back, people remember that you've said it, especially in this day and age with all the TV and the news coverage. And, you know, you can't say anything or put anything in writing without it being all over the internet almost instantly. You have been taken, thou art taken or have been caught with the words of thy mouth. There is a verse in Psalms that says something to the effect that integrity is the person who swears to his own hurt and changes not. And of course, it would be nice to be able to deal with people who are characterized by integrity, but there are so many that they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk, and it doesn't matter whether it contradicts. But be careful. You don't want to commit to being a co-signer with somebody. And he says, do this now, my son. So if you're in this situation, by the way, if you're not in this situation, don't get in it. But if you already are in this situation, my son, do this now and deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. It's literally pester your friend. And why would you be pestering him? Because you would be strongly, you are being strongly urged here to strongly urge your neighbor or your friend to to plead with him either to pay off the obligation or find someone else to secure his debt. You want to be careful. Why would you, if you don't have the ability to pay off somebody's obligation, don't put yourself in that circumstance. And then he says, give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Now, you could take that out of context, and I could preach on that on some Sunday morning, but that would be out of context, wouldn't it? And the idea in context is don't delay. Get it taken care of right away, lest something happen and you have to pay up for something that has been of no benefit to you. Deliver thyself. Seek to end the arrangement. Deliver thyself as a roe. A roe is a gazelle. From the hand of the hunter. You know, if a gazelle is aware that there's a hunter, the gazelle is going to get out of that situation as fast as possible. And as a bird from the hand of a fowler. We used to have people that we knew named Fowler, and of course this has nothing to do with them, but a fowler is one who hunts birds. A bird is liable to get caught or trapped. Don't delay. Get out of this situation as quickly as you possibly can. Now, you may not get out of it simply because the individual, you've obligated yourself. And so the point is simple. Don't get into that situation, and then you won't have to worry about getting out of it, and you won't have to worry about what's going to happen if he loses his job or if he decides just to go bankrupt or something like that. You're obligated. Go to the ant. Now he changes directions here. Go to the ant. And he means by this these little creatures that we like to kill if they get into our kitchen. Okay? You understand how that is. We don't like ants in our kitchen. We haven't had any for a while, and we don't want any. If you have them at your home, keep them. Don't bring them over to our house. They get in, and it's hard to get rid of them. But consider the ant. Thou sluggard. Apparently, the person he's addressing is a lazy individual. Consider her ways. And be wise. Now, take note of the ant. Have you ever seen a leader that's physically present with the ants? Yet the ant works with initiative, diligence, foresight, in contrast to the sluggard who wouldn't lift a finger to do any work. The ant just keeps on gathering food for later on. Much can be learned by observing the diligence of an ant. Which, meaning the ant, having no guide, no captain, no overseer, no superintendent, no ruler, provideth her meat, provides her own food in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. The ant is very good at this. Now, where did this ant learn this behavior? The ant never learned this behavior. This was something that God gave to the ant. It's not a learned behavior. And we should be as diligent in providing for the needs of ourselves and our families as an ant. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? The sluggard is not a baseball player who hits lots of home runs. It is a lazy individual. How long wilt thou sleep? It sounds like he likes to sleep all day. Or when wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? When are you going to get up? Now, you know, some people you can call at 3 or 4 in the morning and they'll be up. Could be it's because they didn't go to bed yet. Or it could be that they're out getting the worm like the early bird. But you can't call some people before 2 o'clock in the afternoon lest you wake them up. Now, there's something wrong with that picture. I understand that some people have to work second or third shift, and I understand that they don't get to live a normal life. When I say normal life, sleeping during the night and working during the day. But some people just can't bring themselves to do any work. Consider the ant rather than the sluggard. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, to rest, or to relax. When you do that, when the person is negligent because of laziness, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth. One that traveleth is a vagabond, or a hobo, a tramp. And procrastination will bring unexpected disaster, according to the next phrase, and thy want, or your need, will come as an armed man. His need is going to always keep him from being prosperous, because he's always in an emergency situation. If he had planned, if he had worked diligently, he wouldn't be in that kind of situation. But when somebody's always in an emergency mode, maybe he's got a problem with a lack of proper planning. Some churches seem to operate best in an emergency mode. There's always a crisis. I've seen the same thing in some colleges. There's always a crisis. That's where using the means that you have wisely comes in to play. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be someday when the washing machine quits, when the furnace quits, when the water heater quits. Nobody wants to have a cold shower necessarily if he can have a nice warm one. At the same time, because of the lack of care, many things are not taken care of in a timely way, and then they become emergencies. We can avoid a lot of that by being diligent like the ants. And you go on and you see that wisdom will also preserve one from all kinds of problems. A naughty person is a worthless person. And then it's further defined as a wicked man. Walketh, he goes about, he lives with a froward or a perverse mouth. You can tell what people are by listening to them speak. If you listen and listen and listen and listen, and they never have any kind of perversity coming out of their mouths, they never have any kind of bad in terms of off-color jokes, that's good. But when that's all they are, there's something wrong in there. What they're doing is demonstrating their real character that's coming from deep within them. He, meaning the naughty or worthless or wicked man, winketh with his eyes. He speaketh with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. He's giving signals without speaking or saying anything. He is communicating with body language. Now, sometime it would be interesting for you to just sit and observe people that you can see and not listen to them and watch their motions. And you can pretty well tell what they're saying just by watching their gestures, their motions, the way they present themselves, and so on. My wife and I were sitting at a stoplight yesterday, waiting and waiting and waiting for our light to turn green. And to our right was an individual who was very animated in his body movements. And we were trying to figure out what he was saying because we couldn't hear him. And we both came to the same conclusion, that what he was saying was that he was defending himself against some atrocity that he had encountered somewhere along the line. Now, my guess was that he was probably guilty and was just trying to make a case for himself. You try it out sometime. Turn the volume off on the TV, and you might very well be able to understand what's being said. Maybe it's not such a good thing, but this person is always communicating with his own body. Why is it that some people can be picked out by others? Be careful of the way you carry yourself. Some people find each other. The wrong kind of people find each other. They know. The way people dress, the way people appear, are they advertising themselves and their availability? You need to be very cautious about this sort of thing. One of the reasons ladies are supposed to be modest, because it sends a message to somebody who's looking for something that's not right. Frowardness, perversity, I mean, verse 14, is in his heart, meaning this naughty person's, this worthless, wicked man's heart. Now, I know that it is often taught that the heart has to do with the emotions, but not in the Old Testament. It has to do with the mind. It's the thought. Remember the verse, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. That'll help you to keep that straight. This problem here is, this is what's in his thought process. This is what's in his mind. He deviseth mischief continually, or evil continually. He probably lies awake at night dreaming up things he can do that are not right. Then he soweth discord. He sows strife or contention. He spreads it. There were always, in some of my places where I have been, little gatherings of certain people over in a corner someplace. And when somebody would watch, you might figure out what they're saying. But if anybody goes up and joins the group, why, then they change the subject. So you know they're not up to doing what maybe they should be. Maybe they're planning a birthday party for the pastor or something like that. But more than likely, they're planning on how to get rid of him. So what you do as a pastor is you send some deacon over there to join the conversation, and you'd be surprised how much that will change things. You just never know. Therefore shall his calamity, speaking again of this naughty, worthless, wicked guy, then shall his calamity or disaster come suddenly, all of a sudden, instantly, in an instant. suddenly, in an instant, shall he be broken or crushed without remedy, without healing. And he is not going to be able to do anything to prevent it. Do you suppose that God is intervening and giving this person what he has coming? It's very possible. Then he goes on with another approach to some things. These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination, meaning a detestable thing, a hated thing, a disgusting thing unto him, meaning unto the Lord. Why six and then seven? Because the list is specific but not exhaustive. Okay, it's specific. There are some things that the Lord hates, and there's a bunch of them. The Bible is filled with things that the Lord hates. They all have to do with sin, but the list is not exhaustive. He could say there are six or seven and then list 10. You know, the point is there's a lot of them. And then he says a proud look. This is number one, haughty eyes. A lying tongue. You know, lying is not good, but some people are chronic liars. You don't want to do business with them. Many of them seem to end up in politics. You know that, and I know that. You cannot believe what you hear. You know that. Honesty and integrity do not seem to be requirements for political office these days. Now, I hate to say that because I think we should respect those in office. But I've been alive too many years and seen too many politicians and heard them and listened to them, and I'm not impressed. And I'm not thinking of any in particular, I'm thinking of the whole bunch of them as a general statement. Now, that's not to say that every politician is corrupt any more than that every used car salesman is a cheater, okay? Any more than to say that every truck driver is immoral. But we know that there are certain classes of people that seem to have certain sins that are characteristic of them. And it's refreshing to see some godly people in places. And you and I both know that there are lots of people out there that would take advantage of you. Anyway, back to this, a lying tongue and hands that shed innocent blood, somebody who murders innocent victims, and heart, again, it's a mind, that deviseth wicked imaginations. The heart doesn't do any devising. It pumps blood. But the mind does. People lie awake at night just dreaming up things. Wicked imaginations, wicked plans, feet that be swift or make haste or are quick in running to mischief. It's almost as if there's mischief. It just attracts them as if it's a magnet. They can't wait to get there and get involved in running to mischief or doing evil. They can't wait to do something they know is wrong. He goes on, a false witness that speaks lies. Well, that's what false witnesses do. They lie. And he that soweth discord, somebody who spread strife or contention among brethren. Churches have an awful time with this one because it seems that there is often, all too often, somebody who is just stirring up trouble. Now, teasing is one thing, and we do some teasing, but don't take the teasing seriously, but some people are always undermining the character of somebody else. We don't want to be that way. We want to be faithful and honest before the Lord. It will destroy a local church to have somebody, it only takes one, sowing discord among the brethren. And then he goes on in the next verse, verse 20 this time, "My son, keep thy father's commandment." Well, now that would sound very much like obey the commandment. "And forsake not the law," meaning the instruction of thy mother. Now, do you get the idea that all of a sudden it's not just the father who teaches the children? It's both mom and dad. And what happens is that they need to be united in what they tell the children. When you have different messages coming from mom and from dad, you end up with a confused child, and he soon figures out which one to go to when he wants something. Okay? Now, my kids used to go to my wife thinking she was the softer touch. They missed it. If they'd come to me, I'd have given them what they wanted, and she said no. Well, unless I chose to overrule her, which I'm sure I did sometime or other, at least once or twice, why, they could have had what they wanted. I wasn't opposed to it. Now, they did wise up eventually, but it took a while. "Keep thy father's commandment, forsake not the law of thy mother." Both parents are involved in the teaching and instruction process, and they need to be united in what they're teaching. Now, the simple thing is that if we are scriptural, both mom and dad are scriptural, it will solve a lot of problems. "Bind them," meaning your father's commandment and your mother's instruction, "continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck." And it sounds very much like you're to make the father's commandment and the mother's instruction a part of your life and keep them with you at all times. Now, the sad truth is that the commandment of some fathers and the instruction of some mothers is not wholesome and not good. That's very sad. But as believers, our commandments, our instructions to our children should be scriptural and should be right and not self, just for self's benefit, but for the benefit of what is the child, what is best for the child before the Lord. "When thou goest, it," meaning the father's commandment and the mother's instruction, "shall lead thee," shall guide you, shall direct you. "When thou sleepest, it," meaning the father's commandment and mother's instruction, "shall keep or guard thee." "When thou awakest, it," again, the father's commandment and the mother's instruction, "shall talk with thee," suggests it'll come to your mind, you'll remember it. I can remember a lot of instruction my father gave me. And though I did not necessarily appreciate it at the time, because I was far wiser at 13 than my dad ever thought of being, I learned that he grew tremendously in his intellect while I was away at college. And I came home and found out how smart he was. Now, I know that I'm speaking facetiously, but some of the best advice I ever received from anybody in my whole life came from my father. And though I didn't appreciate it at the time, I learned how good that instruction was. I eventually passed most of it on to my children. And surely enough, as you can guess, they passed it on to their children as well, as if it was original with them. It wasn't even original with me. My father might have been instructed by my grandfather, for all I know, and probably was. But make these things apart, for the commandment, that's the commandment of the Father, is a lamp. And the law, that's the instruction of the mother, is light. These, the commandment and the instruction will guide you through dark places. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Some children don't like to be told they are wrong. Well, that's too bad. They need to be told when they are wrong. And if we don't do that in the homes, then where are they going to learn what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in terms of behavior? Instruction sometimes has to tell a person he's mistaken. Consider, as you study English grammar, if the teacher didn't point out to you the error of the grammatical mistake you have just made, how are you going to fix it? You'll talk like you came from South Carolina or North Carolina and had very bad English. Who knows? We grew up hearing lots of things. Our oldest son had really good grammar, and then he went to school where all the kids were talking about the Dukes of Hazzard all the time. Apparently that was a very popular TV program, and they employed terrible grammar. So all of a sudden, our little perfect child had adopted that method of speaking. After all that we had done for him in the home to teach him good grammar, it was corrupted by his peers in kindergarten. The parent's instruction will guide the child throughout his life. We need to give the instruction that would be the right thing, and always encourage them to pursue after the Lord with all their hearts and souls and minds and strength. Now, in most of our cases, our children are gone from the home already, but there might be some where the children are still at home, and certainly there are grandchildren or great-grandchildren, and maybe we can be helpful to them as well. It's amazing, isn't it, when we are given children, we're in our 20s, early 20s, mid-20s, sometimes late 20s, sometimes early 30s. And about the time we get everything all figured out in life, we don't have any more children at home. It's amazing, isn't it? But God did it that way, and He knows what He's doing, so we never get excited. Well, we'll start with verse 24 next time. And what we see is that the instruction that the father and mother give will keep a child out of immorality as we go on with this next time. I get tired of dealing with immorality in Proverbs. What it shows is how rampant it is, and that God thought it necessary to give lots of lessons along this line. Well, let's pray, and we'll be dismissed.